we are talking about investing debt or equity passive income strategies for real estate. A quick disclaimer, the InTrust Group or InTrust does not provide any investment advice. We do not endorse any products. All information and materials covered here today are for educational purposes only. All parties, as always, are encouraged to consult with their attorneys, accountants, or any financial advisor that they may have before entering into an investment. On today's agenda, we have Miss Whitney here. We'll be going over understanding equity versus debt, defining real estate debt funds, key factors to consider for each of those, analyzing market cycles, key questions to ask yourself, how to invest in a real estate debt fund, and then, as always, we will have a Q&A at the end. A little bit about me. I've had over 9 years here at the InTrust Group, actually coming on 10. So I've been with InTrust for quite some time. I love to educate investors and professionals on how to use a tax-advantaged retirement plan to invest in alternatives. We, as a custodian, we're IRA administrators, or the InTrust Group is IRA administrators. We have very knowledgeable staff, many that hold a CISP certification, and we host monthly webinars just like this one to continue educating our clients. We hold $6 billion in assets under our administration. We have over 24,000 active investors, so we work with quite a few clients. We've been in business for over 45 years, and we pride ourselves on one point of contact, meaning every client and company that works with us gets a singular team to be able to work with and ensure the best experience possible. Right, so without further ado, I will hand it over to Whitney, our guest speaker today with passive investing.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Rachel. Yes. And we're going to talk about how to get debt and equity allocation right in your self-directed IRA in 2026. As Rachel already alluded, I feel like one of the most powerful investments you can actually have in your IRA right now is a debt investment. So we will have a pretty heavy conversation around debt, but both are tools to be used in the tool belt. And especially if you're looking for an investment right now, maybe you're w trying to figure out, oh, when's the right time to get back in the equity side of the market? Debt can be a really good stopgap as well. Now, I went ahead and gave you my contact information so you don't have to wait until the end to get it. You can join me. You can simply email me, whitney@passiveinvesting.com. You can also go to passiveinvestingwithwhitney.com and schedule time with me for a one-on-one consultation. Now, a little bit about me, if this is the first time you and I are meeting. Again, my name is Whitney Elkins Hutton. The picture here on the screen is the whole reason why I invest in real estate, but more importantly, passive real estate. Since 2002, I have scaled an active portfolio, and that includes over 800 million in assets, 6,500 residential units, 2,200 self-storage units, some car washes. I did a lot of fix and flipping, so I am very versed on being an active player in real estate. But I will tell you that the golden handcuffs started to unlock for me when I figured out how to take this active income and savings and turn it into passive income and build a wealth generating machine. And one of my key tools in my tool belt is leveraging investment accounts, or excuse me, retirement accounts like a solo 401k, a self-directed IRA, or even a Roth self-directed IRA. Now we're going to be talking about how to use debt and equity within your self-directed IRA. But nothing we talk about here today should be construed as financial advice, legal advice, tax advice. So make sure you take all this advice to your investing team because they're going to know your own personal situation and be able to tailor it for you. Now, the reason why I feel this is a very important conversation right now to have, about, do I go into equity or do I go into debt, especially in relation and how I'm going to use the funds within my IRA, is because of the timing we are in the market. Normally, and I'm going to get into this, I'll show you some data. But what I'm still see investors doing right now is that they need income. But they're buying equity assets, okay, in order to get cash flow, right? Yes, and ideally the markets will start to recover. But as you know, we've kind of had a little bit of a hiccup, and I'm going to ex explain to you in clear terms what our hiccup is right now in our market recovery. But conversely, we have the other type of investor that wants, to get invested, wants to get some growth in their portfolio, but maybe they're sitting in debt. So we have investors doing kind of opposite of what they need to be doing with their portfolio. Or you actually have a good idea what you're going want from your portfolio to perform over the next few years, but you're using the wrong structure in order to invest. So I see a lot of investors that actually go into an equity asset or a debt flow asset expecting to get the returns and benefit from those returns right now, but they misplace their strategy within the structure. All right, so we compound that with what's happening in the markets right now. We still have a lot of capital sitting on the sideline. It's still pretty hard to understand, are we at the bottom of the market? Okay, is equity returning, or do we need to wait another 6 to 18 months before these deals actually are good deals to go into? If you're looking for income right now, especially in an equity deal, if you're trying to get that all-in-one investment, place capital in one investment that's going to give you capital preservation, cash flow, equity growth, and tax benefits, getting income is a lot harder to find, especially consistently in high-quality assets. You might be taking on an incredible amount of risk in the asset in order to get cash flow. And still, the markets are shifting pretty quickly right now. Now, I just took a look right before we got on the call. I looked at the S&P 500. Today's a rosy day, right? Everybody is loving their stock portfolio. We're at all-time highs. However, we are got some major key points in the market that is setting up for a recessive, if not a stagflation type of environment. But most importantly, right now in this type of a market, is it is possibly investors can get into what seems like a really good deal, but if it mismatches where you're at in the market, it can still have really bad outcomes. All right, so understanding that on a high level, I just want to kind of take a step back and make sure everybody here understands what investing in debt actually means, what investing in equity actually means. Okay, they have two different jobs in your portfolio, and this is independent of what you are doing in your retirement account, right? Debt investments should be looked at initially like an income engine. When we have our capital stack, we're in the lowest tier of the capital stack. They should be giving predictable income. Again, lower risk position, shorter duration, limited, but they're going to be limited in their upside. But that debt, think of that income engine as stabilizing your portfolio. Now, what's sexy to invest in is equity. Everybody, we are trained from a very young age to go to school, get a good job, invest in your retirement account and for growth. And then, like, you wake up 30, 40 years later, you got this huge nest egg and you ride off into the retirement sunset. Okay, but equity, like if you're going to go into real estate equity, again, that is a growth engine. Okay, you have appreciation-driven returns, but you could expect some delays in cash flow, especially in this phase in the market. Equity assets by nature are going to have higher volatility. They don't always go up and to the right in valuation. Sometimes they respond to the markets as well, where they have asset or valuation corrections, and then eventually they'll start going up again. Equity assets should always be viewed with the lens that they are a longer hold period. So most equity assets that are high quality that I'm looking at, I'm anticipating that hold to be 5 to 10 years at least, especially where we're at in this market cycle. I would pencil out a long hold period. Now, those equity assets are for growth in your portfolio, and we should treat them as such. So, as you can see, we actually need both in our portfolio, one to stabilize it, create that income engine, and another type of asset in order to grow it. All right. So here's just a quick snap of the capital stack. If I mention the word capital stack and you're just like, I don't know what that means. It simply means the different layers of money that go into a deal. All right. So the common, or excuse me, the senior debt usually is going to be bank money, right? You go to the bank, get a loan. Mezzanine debt is going to be, say, like a home equity line of credit or a home equity loan or some sort of other second loan position. All right. And then you flip into the equity, right? This is where the highest risk, highest reward returns are generally in an equity deal. Now, we can also use the capital stack to understand where risk lies in an investment as a passive investor. All right. So if you are investing for cash flow, or you say you're close to retirement and you want to take a low risk position, okay, getting it closer to the debt positions or in the debt positions will carry generally less risk than going into the equity positions. Okay. We can get stabilized, predictable cash flow sometimes in these debt positions, whereas we should view equity as a higher risk position where we have to have a strong market and deal performance in order to coup a deal. All right. So how do we understand what part asset we need to actually have, debt or equity, in our portfolio? Okay. And does it change with market conditions? And the answer is yes to both. Okay. We need both debt and equity in our portfolio, but also that what we are investing in, there might be a better time to go into debt, and there might be a better time to get to look at equity. So if you're looking at a market, let's break out the four different phases, general phases of a market. So we'll start at the top. Say like in 2021 through 2023, what we were seeing is the hyper supply. We had a huge amount of deliveries come online, especially in multifamily real estate, self-storage real estate. We're starting to see this happen in industrial real estate. So we've got each of these asset classes cycle differently from each other, not perfectly all together. Once you have the hyper supply, you got to wait for the absorption. Okay, you got to wait for all these units to get absorbed into the market. Okay, but that drives down, we get increased vacancies, more completions online. Once we start getting the bottom out on this, we're in the recessive part of the market. One could say that we're probably somewhere in the recessive part of the multifamily market, whether we're certain parts of the United States are just now heading into it, other parts of the United States are coming out of it. Okay. Then, once we see all this absorption happen, all those hypersupply units being absorbed, all right, then we start seeing, declining vacancy, new construction starts will happen, and then we get a new expansion phase all over again. But as you can see, it's just a matter of, and not if, but when we start hitting the next hypersupply phase, and the cycle repeats again. All right. So debt and equity are going to play differently in the different parts of the market cycle. If you're in a hyper supply market, this is probably not a great time to get into equity. Okay. Getting into an equity investment is probably somewhere in here, halfway through the recovery up to the top. All right. These are good times, maybe not quite to the top, but this is a good window to get an equity investment. And so it's right for an investor to start positioning themselves right there if to get into an equity deal if that matches your plan for investing. The other part that we have to take a look at is the credit cycle. Okay, so if investing in equity and the recovery in parts of the expansion phase are good, it is good to invest in debt, especially in this where less credit becomes available. So we hit that hyper supply part right up here at top. This is where we see the bank pull back on credit. All right, and then there's less credit right here in the hyper supply and recessionary parts of the environment. This is an amazing opportunity for the investor to step in and take over the bank's returns. So again, when we look at market cycles, you can simply take all your different asset classes you're investing in, plot them out where they are in this market cycle, and overlay the credit cycle on top of it, and it will clearly tell you which should you be looking at, debt or equity right now. Well, where I feel like we're at is close here to the bottom, right? So we're in this kind of interesting phase right now, that to where if you're really wanting to jump on it, equity could be a great thing to add to your portfolio, but debt's still very advantageous. I think debt, again, as an income engine, plays well through all parts of the market cycle, but is more advantageous in the last two phases. All right. So we also have to take into account not just physically where we're at in the market and the credit cycle, but what makes this time period so unique. Well, we're not having a normal recovery like we would in a recession, even though we haven't called the R word yet. We are heading in and already are in a more 1970s like stagflation type environment. So our investor blue playbooks that we've built for the last 15, 20, 25 years for investing, they don't exactly fit perfectly this model. So we have to kind of discern what's happening. So what makes this unique is that inflation's not done with us. I think the last time I checked inflation, we're at 3.8, up from 2.9. Okay. Now, even if the conflict were in Iran were to resolve immediately, we would probably still see that inflation working through our markets for the next 6 to 18 months. Okay. That's if the conflict were to end today and everybody packed up and went home and the Strait of Hormuz was open. The other thing, what's causing the inflation is energy driver. The cost of energy is going higher. Now, energy as a percentage, what the average American spends on energy, say like gas for their cars or energy to heat their homes, is less of a percentage of their total budget than it was in the 1970s. We actually have more plastics in, packaging in our environment. That also is going to impact the cost of goods. So we've got these two concomitant factors happening in the environment. Now, we're starting to see a little bit of a slowdown in the GDP. It probably hasn't been as slow as some economists would think it would be right now, but the Fed actually has already made it very clear they're not going to lower interest rates for the remainder of the year. If anything, they may actually have to raise into a slowing environment. Okay. What you can expect to happen if these three tiers tumble together is that credit is going to tighten very quickly. And that makes it a very good case for us to have that income engine already built out into our portfolio because everybody will be scrambling to invest in debt. All right. Now, that's kind of like what we're seeing in the market. All right. Setting us up for where debt can be really a good thing for us to be invested in right now. But if you're in an equity deal, like what should you be paying attention to right now, especially as a passive investor, is you need to be paying attention on the operator's ability to execute. Okay. And more importantly, for the business plan of that asset, make sure if you're going in any new asset that the business plan is stress tested. And what do I mean by this? If we're going into an inflationary environment, people are going to be able to pay, they're not going to be able to, do 5% rent increases. They might only be able to do 1 or 2% rent increases on their property. So make sure that the operator is looking at those numbers with that lens. Now, also expenses could go up. Right, especially if you're investing in a value add deal, we've got to, there's a pass through cost to be able to get materials shipped around the world, and if energy prices are higher, the cost of those materials are going to be higher. I'm actually rebuilding part of our fence after a wind event, and I just got quoted for 2 6x6 posts to rebuild that fence just boggled my mind. I was like, wait a second, like I paid a third of that when I initially built the fence, but 6 years ago. So we can expect to see more of that. Also, as we move through this market, especially if you're looking at an equity deal, be it self-storage, multifamily, industrial, if your operator's looking to do a refinance, the refinance windows are going to be pretty short right now. So when the Fed does And if when they do start lowering interest rates, they're going to have to keep a really tight view on if they lower rates, will inflation pop up again? Remember, they have a dual mandate in order to stoke the GDP, but also keep inflation lower. And so anticipate that refinance windows are going to be pretty narrow, and that rates will remain stubbornly high for the next, at least 6 to 18 months, if not longer. So don't expect a 4% refinance rate anytime soon. All right. Now, also as an equity investor, make sure that you're looking at the lens, any passive deal you go into the operator is underwriting several different exit scenarios, because they might be exiting in a market that is a slower market than what we're currently in today. So, meaning that valuations might be compressed, timing might be a little bit uncertain. So, what does that mean? The operator needs to have sufficient reserves in order to carry that asset, and should they have to extend the timeline to get to a better market to sell. Now, all three of these areas are under pressure right now, and that might seem really scary to an equity investor if that's you. But these are just things that, even if we were in a good market, you would still need to invest with an operator that has the ability to execute, that is using strong debt strategies on the asset, and that has multiple exit scenarios for that asset. So we just need to make sure we're tightening up our underwriting, not so much being fearful as we move forward. All right. So we covered where debt could be a good tool. We also covered where equity can be a good tool in our portfolio. We've also covered kind of like the pitfalls of both. If I were going to be deploying capital into debt or equity, this is what I'd be looking at right now as far as making sure these questions are addressed in any deal that I go into. So, if it were a multifamily asset, I would make sure that I am underwriting and that the operator is underwriting higher expenses, anticipating that insurance costs are going to go up, taxes are going to go up, and the cost of labor are going to go up. I would anticipate that they should be modeling slower rent growth. Again, if they're modeling out 4, 5, 6% year-over-year rent growth, does the business plan work if there is no rent growth or 1% rent growth? Okay, make sure you're stress testing that model and you're okay with the returns at that level. And again, make sure that you're planning for longer hold times and less exit uncertainty. So, what would that look like? Does the operator have the ability to hold that asset for 3 to 4 years longer than they initially anticipated? Meaning, do they have enough operational reserves, capital reserves? What does the debt structure look like? Do they have all those things in place? Do they have a plan? When it comes to like debt or private credit, this is a great time in this phase of the market. Make sure that we're avoiding borrowers that have really tight margins on their products, on their projects. So this is where, when I'm looking at debt funds, I'm looking at debt funds where they initially only lend 60 to 65% loan to value of the asset. They're not getting up in that 70, 80, or 90% loan to value on the asset. Be cautious with mezzanine debt positions, that second debt position. If you're going to use debt as a pure income engine for your portfolio, mezzanine debt positions are going to be, you need to look at them with the lens that they're far more opportunistic. Now, I see investors all the time. They'll talk to me about our debt fund that we have, and they'll be like, "Well, hey, I can get 400 basis point higher if I go into this other debt deal." And I kind of scratch my head. I'm like, "You can, but the risk is showing up in a much different position there. Do you understand the risk you're taking?" Okay. If you need predictable income, this is the place to, again, build that stable, predictable income engine. Now, as we move through the 2026 through 2030 markets, in a debt fund, expect deal flow to be a little bit slower and default rates to pop up, right? Markets are going to be challenged, and we're going to see that challenge not show, it won't show up equally across the United States. It'll show up differently in different areas. Do I have the crystal ball on that? I do not. But it is natural for deal flow to slow down and for some defaults to occur. But what we can control, what you and I both can control as a passive investor is our own behavior around risk. So this is where it's, I always encourage people before you make your next investment, make sure that you've reviewed your portfolio. Are you over-concentrated in any one operator, asset type? Have you been chasing yield instead of durability with your assets? If so, this is the time to correct that before you go into your next deal. And are you assuming liquidity in an asset that isn't actually there? Okay, so again, we can always take control of our own investment behavior. Okay, so we've talked about debt, we talked about equity, we've talked about some of the challenges of both, we've talked where we're about in the market cycle, we've also talked about, what are some underwriting questions that I'd make sure to add, both around debt and equity, but more importantly, our own investing strategies moving forward. How do we kind of combine this all together with utilizing our self-directed IRA account correctly? The biggest mistake that I see with people leveraging or investing in a passive deal, be it debt or equity, with their self-directed IRA is that they treat their IRA as a holding company and they load it with equity assets because it's tax advantage, and they totally ignore their income need and their investment timing. All right, so I just recently, last week, got off the phone with an investor. They're heavily into equity deals. And he's like, I'm going to retire. I need to retire in 2 years. And I'm not sure if my equity deals will have cycled out by then. And I'm like, okay, so what can we help you do? And he said, I need income fast, but I still need to grow. Okay, and this is where I really love putting debt into a self-directed IRA, a debt fund investment, is because your IRA is a compounding engine for you. Every dollar you put in your self-directed IRA is working at the highest tax efficiency for you. It's not just part, it is not a holding account. So we shouldn't just, haphazardly drop investments in there, but think of this as how can I get repeated compounding over and over and over again in a predictable, systematic way? So let's talk about what those two different ways are, like for debt and for equity. Okay. For equity first, make sure any investment you, if you're going to put in an equity investment in your self-directed IRA, that you do not need it for near-term liquidity. Okay. One, that'll allow that investment to exit over time. Two, it'll allow it to compound over time, those returns. Things that you can use with your self-directed IRA to invest in are multifamily or residential real estate deals, private equity deals, other long-term hold investments. Now, it is great to put an equity deal in your IRA. All right. It does get to tax shelter that. Either forever or defer the taxes on it until you withdraw the income. But also think in terms of when do you need that equity deal to for sure have cycled out by. Okay. If you have a set timeline in place and you're unable to hold, okay, say that you need the money back in 5 years, but there's a potential that the equity deal is going to go 7 or 10 years. I really encourage you to look at debt funds and investing because I think they're entirely underrated using debt in the IRAs. Why? Because normally, let's think about it, debt strategies are taxed as ordinary income. You get a 1099, or you might get a Box 1K1 income. And if it's taxed as ordinary income, it hits your highest tax bracket. Now, if you put a debt fund or even individual notes in your IRA, it can actually compound without that current tax drag. So, say you put $250,000 in a debt fund investment and it yields 8%, you can allow that to compound monthly without that tax drag. Okay, whereas if you held it in a taxable account, you would have to account for the tax drag, or potentially, depending on how the fund's structured, have other passive losses that could offset that. Okay, now this, if you use like a very predictable, debt fund, something that's paying out continuously month over month, All right. We leave those returns. We actually leave it compounding in the actual investment itself. It stays tax-free within the self-directed IRA environment, and you've got yourself a little income engine. It can grow, get equity-like growth until you need it. Then we turn the spigot the other way, meaning we move it from monthly compounding to actually taking the cash flow off of it. And that can be a really powerful strategy to use your IRA for. Things to put in there: debt funds, promissory notes, other income-focused strategies. Say like dividend-producing stocks. The most important thing is the self-directed IRA is shielding the high-income strategies from ordinary income tax drag. Now, just because there are things you should use your IRA for, there's also things you should not use it for. Now, this is not in combination with everything that interest is telling you about what you can't invest in. This is those are the rules. What I'm telling you is more strategy. Okay, so if you have capital that you have to have access to, think about like that. Do you want to tie that up in your IRA? If it's a short-term investment that you're making, try not to tie it up in your IRA. Anything requiring flexibility or liquidity, probably not a good idea to put it in your IRA. If timing matters at all, it probably does not belong in your IRA. And this is a big mistake, is that I see a lot of investors try to shove as much as they can into their IRAs. But they ignore, because, and rightfully so, because the IRAs are tax advantaged, but they ignore the timing that they need to get access to that money. So make sure that you're partnering with your financial advisor and creating a balanced approach there. All right, so we already talked about it. To sum it all up, what we would see in this market, liquidity is actually one of the hidden risks, okay? Expect exits to be less predictable. Income timing matters, and if all your IRA is equity, you're going to be caught waiting in an illiquid environment and hoping that those deals exit before you actually need the funds. Now, real quick, I want to give everybody a framework, kind of like how to underwrite debt and equity. We've been talking pretty theoretical, really, you can take a screenshot of this. Really, what we're trying, oops, sorry, what we're trying to do is like what actually belongs in the IRA. So first you have to understand what your fit is. Like, how do you want to use those funds? Okay. Then you have to come up with a framework on executing and underwriting. All right. Sorry, here's the screen. Okay. Well, sorry, we have to determine our fit. Do we need debt or equity? Okay. Where do we want to be in our risk in terms of the capital stack? Okay, then we're going to figure out how we're going to execute all those questions that I gave you to think to add to your underwriting, whether it's debt or equity. And then you have to think about where you want that money. Do you want the money invested in the IRA, utilizing those tax advantages, or do you want to have it outside the IRA in a taxable account? All right, so again, you could place debt or equity inside of your IRA. It's entirely up to you. Think in terms of, like, again, all these different things that we would underwrite with different asset strategies, be it a real estate debt fund, promissory note, or even heck, like a multifamily equity deal. Take a look at whether what your goals are. Do you need the income? Are you okay with more opportunistic income? Are you using, the asset for growth and diversification? What are your liquidity? When do you need that money? Okay. What is your return profile? Okay. Also, what is it the asset of best fit for the your particular time of life? All right. All right. So let's open this up for Q&A. Just kind of a recap of what we talked about today is, what does debt and equity serve? Why misallocation actually can create some stress and illiquidity and poor outcomes. And then, more importantly, how to think through that fit stack and execute and location. Awesome.
Awesome. Yeah,
I
Thank
was
you so
waiting for you.
much.
Yeah. Sorry for the one slide that should have been at the beginning. That would have tied everything together. We got everything tied together there at the end. But thank you so much, Rachel.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Yeah, so we will just scroll on through. I think there's a couple additional slides here. Perfect. So wrapping up, how to get started with investing in with your IRA. So three easy steps. I'm a little biased because obviously I do this every single day, but we are here to hold your hand. So number one, you would establish an interest IRA. Number two, you would fund your account through a transfer, rollover, or a contribution. And then number three, you would direct interest to purchase your chosen investment. So, what's next here at the interest group? So, we'll be sending you a replay and any additional resources that go along with this video so that you can go back, listen to it, rewatch it. Be sure to register for our June webinar, which is Gold and Silver Outlook Risk or Opportunity for your IRA investments. As always, a really great place to find more information is on our website at our learning center. Our marketing team does a wonderful job making sure you have so many resources, documents, webinars, etc. So please be sure to look there and then follow us on any of our social media channels. And then now opening it up, like Whitney said, to our Q&A. So please type away, ask any questions. If we're able to answer them, we will absolutely do that. And we'll be reading them off in just a moment here.
I can go ahead and start. I can see the questions.
Perfect. Okay. Yep. I see it now too. You go ahead.
So you mentioned the question is you mentioned short term and the investment debt. What constitutes short term in the space 5, 10 plus years? Yeah, so that's really great. A great question because I think a lot of people might have been seen in the news that private credit or private debt is struggling. You know, Blackstone has had some issues. BlackRock, Blue Owl have had issues in the private credit space. So let's think about the two biggest when you're underwriting debt, you have to understand how is the asset valued? Is it can it be valued by a third party, like a broker's price opinion or an appraisal? Or is it some sort of like multiple on value that we don't know if that multiple is going to hold at a future date? Also, you have to think about the term of it. Like, is the debt being held for, say, 6 to 9 months, or is it being held for 5, 7, 10 years? Okay, the longer the debt and the a more unclear the valuation, the riskier that debt will be. I'm actually talking about the type of debt of adding to your portfolio is kind of you might have seen when this is what we have is fix and flip debt. And so we actually have our own lending arm where we raise capital, our lending arm deploys it into fixing up 3 bedroom, 1 bath homes, 3 bedroom, 2 bath homes. You know, these business plans are done in a very short time period. We can get a broker's price opinion of what the value of the home is today, also in say 6 months or 9 months. Will the market move in that time period? Yes, but we're leaving ourselves 35 to 40% cushion for that market to move. These are debt instruments we can get in and out of readily. And long story short, those are the type of instruments that I encourage people to look at when they're building out this income engine machine. In their portfolio, whether you hold it in a taxable account or you build it out within your self-directed IRA, which by the way, that's where I love holding it because you avoid the taxes or at least defer them. But what happens is a lot of times investors are like, oh, you know, I don't really like 6% or 8% or even 10%. I found a debt deal that gets me 12, 14, 18%. You have to think about that's probably a more opportunistic position where you're concentrated in one asset and a much longer business plan that's valued on some sort of multiple exit that you don't have visibility into. So, debt does not mean it's risk-free, just risk shows up in a different way. And so I personally love these short-term instruments, as part of my income engine.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. I think that is the only question that I see here. Are there any other questions that we can answer for you?
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for asking.
All right, awesome. I don't see any additional questions. I'll give it another, let's call it 30 seconds, see if anybody else adds anything in. And then we'd be happy to get those answered. I do know, I think on the next slide is our contact information again. So either yours, Whitney, or yeah, both of ours on there. So please do feel free to reach out if you wanted a more one-on-one conversation with myself or with Whitney. I know she's really wonderful, always happy to answer any questions.
There was a question that came in about what about purchasing other businesses? I need a little bit more context about that. I think purchasing businesses for cash flow is a one, do you have to understand, do you have the wherewithal to buy a business, right? Not everybody like should buy a business. What are you doing it? Oh, thank you. Laundromats. That was a clarification. For cash flow, like I think those can be great investments. Are do laundromats grow with equity? Maybe a little bit. But that that's a you're buying a stream of cash flow there. And holding it long term, I would imagine your growth strategy there is going to be how many laundromats can you like add to your portfolio and then maybe sell your entire portfolio. But that, I mean, could you do that? Rachel, could you put that in your self-directed IRA?
Could you do it? Yes. Would you want to consult with a tax advisor? Because could you possibly also be have, getting yourself into unrelated business income tax? Also, yes. Again, it's something we always recommend clients doing, especially if they're unfamiliar in this space. Always have to talk with a tax advisor. But short answer is yes, you can put it in an IRA.
Another question came in. What is a storing debt strategy? If you could clarify that question, that would be great. I'd be happy to answer it. And then another, oh, I think that one went away.
Might have disappeared there. I think it was asking about pulling equity out of your IRA. So there's, and please clarify the question if I'm not answering it the way that you're asking, but you can pull money out of your IRA like anything else. It would be through a distribution. So you can take a distribution. You do need to be of retirement age 59 and a half in order to not have any penalties on top of potential taxes, depending on if you have a Roth or traditional plan. This is an IRA, so can you move money to another qualified plan? Maybe you were paid out on your investment in an alternative. You want to move money back and forth between retirement plans. You can do that as well. So there's several ways to move money, or again, you can take a distribution from your plan.
Oh, thank you so much for rephrasing your question. What is a strong debt strategy? So, I think that there's a lot of color there. Like again, debt is this is like a webinar in and of itself. But if we're thinking about building out, like I call it tier two income, that income generating sleeve, predictable income that comes in like clockwork. It is what stabilizes our portfolio while our equity assets are cycling. I like fix and flip debt for that very reason, especially in funds that are unlevered, take on no leverage. And I'm talking about funds that have hundreds of loans in them, like 200, 300, 400 loans that are very well underwritten and a very simple strategy. The really reason why I like fix and flip funds is because one, the duration of the loan is really short, right? When it comes to adding, one of our biggest risks with taking on debt or using debt is the timeline, right? If we're using a short-term debt that, and we get out of it really quick, we're like that would time is on our side. But when we start extending our timeline, that's whenever the markets can move on us. Remember, as an investor, even as an operator, what we cannot control the market. We'd like to be able to think that we can predict everything that happens in the market, but we simply can't. And so I like that bare bones, predictable, boring debt fund investment. And I look to kind of replace, for me personally, I start off, creating, financial security with my income there, that I generate from it. Remember, I don't have to take the income. I can always allow it to compound, whether in the investment itself or take the cash flow and just reinvest back into the deal, right? Either way is compounding for me. And then I can, once I generally, for me personally, once I hit financial security, and then I might take on some riskier positions to kind of get that extra income bump. But what keeps you financially free is the income your assets generate, the stable income they generate. And I will speak for myself, having been a very heavy multifamily investor for the past 12 years, I too, at one point in time, relied on all my rentals, single family rentals, multifamily rentals, to provide everything for me: capital preservation, cash flow, equity growth, tax benefits. That works until you hit a challenging market, and then that's when you realize, oh, I need diversification across the risk layers of investing that capital stack. And so that's where I built out a pure income sleeve. Is it the most tax optimized? No, but I'll tell you, my lifestyle is funded, and that's what I wish for everybody to have, for sure.
Awesome. Thank you. It looks like the question was clarified. So, can you withdraw your own after-tax contributions into an IRA without any penalty? So, this would after-tax contributions would be going into a Roth plan, and there still are penalties for early withdrawals, which would be before 59 and a half. Again, you can move money back and forth between plans before that time frame, but if you're talking about bringing that money back into your personal bank account, you would have to wait till you're 59 and a half.
Ooh, so I think I've heard many people say that you can withdraw your basis, like if you your after tax contribution or your basis. I'm learning too here, Rachel. Are you saying that that's not true?
All right, for a Roth IRA, the distribution still applies. You do have to be 59 and a half.
Gotcha.
Any other questions? All righty. Well, I think that's it. Whitney, again, thank you so much. The webinar will be sent to everybody via recording. And then again, please do feel free to reach out anytime with questions. We are both happy to help.
Awesome. Thank you so
All
much
right.
for having me on, Rachel.
Thanks. Of course. Bye.